On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. What happens if Anthony Davis doesn't play at the level the Mavs need? Can a healthy Kawhi carry the Clippers to a playoff spot? And with Damian Lillard sidelined, how will the Bucks survive without their star? And could this change the future for Giannis in Milwaukee? Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and as always, I'm joined by my man, Dan Devine. What's going on, Dan?
Tom, I'm enjoying myself. We're getting down to the very end of the season. I believe about less than 3 weeks left, 10, 11 games for each team. Plenty to talk about, so let's go ahead and put up some numbers. Where do you want to start today?
I want to start with Anthony Davis and the Dallas Mavericks. Yeah, yeah, unibrow. I almost did the whole Anthony Davis from the Los Angeles Lakers, but I have to recalibrate my mind. Still my brain hasn't really wrapped my head around the whole Anthony Davis is now a Dallas Maverick, but that's what we're going to start today. So this week's big number is plus 21. That's Anthony Davis's plus minus while he's on the floor for the Dallas Mavericks. That is a big number, plus 21. What is not a big number is the two games that he's played. It's a very small sample size, Dan. But what's also interesting is in the minutes that he does play, the Dallas Mavericks are minus 173. Oof. Minus 173 with no AD on the floor over the last 23 games. And obviously, there's a lot of caveats, asterisks next to that minus 173. No Kyrie Irving after his ACL injury. No Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. So they're dealing with a lot of injuries on that side. But the reason why we're focusing on Anthony Davis in this week's episode is because I think he is the most important player in the NBA over the next 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. The most important.
Now, I mean, there's, you know, people will make arguments for like the guys in the MVP race and stuff. But why do you think that AD in particular is such a huge swing piece over the next few weeks?
Because he's the guy that Luka Doncic got traded for. And sure. There's a lot of pieces here of the NBA where it's like, that might be the worst trade in NBA history if Anthony Davis doesn't play and he's hurt and he's not performing at a high level. That's where it is in general. But we're talking about, Dan, the play-in race. The play-in tournament is around the corner. The Dallas Mavericks are in 11th slot. The Portland Trailblazers are at 12. And at 10, you got the Phoenix Suns. And 9, you got Sacramento. There are four teams fighting for those two final spots, 9 and 10. And then the 9 and 10 fight for the final two spots with the 7 and 8 for the play-in. So really, Dan, we're talking about the play-in for the play-in. And Anthony Davis might be the best player in that group when he's healthy. And he's the most important player because he is the swing factor. He didn't play in Tuesday night's game against the New York Knicks. And the New York Knicks, for the first time in franchise history, had two players who had a triple-double in the same game. And a lot of that is because they didn't have to face Anthony Davis. So Anthony Davis, when he's on the floor, they're a pretty good team. It's just the problem is that he's not on the floor a lot because he's often injured and he's got the adductor injury and then a thigh issue that kept him out of that game against the New York Knicks. And then you have to point out the fact that when he's off the floor, they're minus 7.8 points every 100 possessions of the Dallas Mavericks, which is the equivalent of the Utah Jazz. So you got Anthony Davis plus not where you want to be. So I think with Anthony Davis, he is unfairly put in a position where he is supposed to be the savior of this franchise. So much is resting on the shoulders of Anthony Davis, and it's not his fault that it's like do or die for that team. This Dallas Mavericks team depends so much on using him as a hub to create offense, to stop everybody defensively. And it all falls on the shoulders, not on Anthony Davis, but this is all on Nico Harrison and Patrick Dumont for putting him in this position. It's an unfair position for him to be in. They traded Luka Doncic after going to the NBA Finals, winning the Western Conference Finals and punching their ticket into a place that if you get to the NBA Finals, you are pretty much guaranteed to either make the playoffs or get back to the NBA Finals or deep in the postseason the next year. I looked this up, Dan. Over the last 24 years, this century, the Western Conference champion has made it to the playoffs the following season in 22 out of the 24 times. So wow. Basically, every single time that you make it to the NBA Finals, you're going to be good enough the next season to make the playoffs the next year, which is what we're in jeopardy of seeing the Anthony Davis Dallas Mavericks do. But the interesting thing is those two teams that they didn't make the playoffs the next year, it's the 2020 Golden State Warriors that lost Kevin Durant to an Achilles tear in the 2019 NBA Finals, and right. Klay Thompson lost due to an ACL tear. And of course, KD goes over to Brooklyn. The rest is history. They didn't make the playoffs the next year. And the other one is the 2005 Los Angeles Lakers. They traded Shaq in the offseason to the Miami Heat for Brian Grant, for Lamar Odom, and a pick. But the interesting thing there as a comp is the Lakers traded the older guy, Shaq, when they were like, yeah, we made it to the NBA Finals. We didn't win. So let's trade the older guy, the 31-year-old, to the Miami Heat. This Dallas Mavericks organization, Nico Harrison and Patrick Dumont said, hey, we've got that 25-year-old coming into his prime. Let's trade that guy instead of Kyrie Irving and rebuilding around the 25-year-old. They went in the opposite direction. And so now you have it where they're relying on Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis at the wrong side of 30 to lead this team. So this is where we're at. Dan, I know that you probably think that Anthony Davis is a really good player. I agree. Do you think this is more about Anthony Davis? Like, I feel like it's an unfair position for Anthony Davis to be in, is to be the guy who is saving this team. But unfortunately, that's the position that he's in.
Yeah, the structure of the Mavericks was intended to be, we get Anthony Davis to play the four next to our two awesome centers, and then Anthony Davis can like work off of those centers running pick and roll with Kyrie Irving, our awesome ball handler. And we put really cool shooters around them, or like dynamic athletic wings who can defend. And we're huge and we're monstrous and we can plug up passing yeah. lanes and protect the rim. And then he gets there and everybody gets hurt. And like absolutely everybody, to the point where we are now like, we are deep in Najee Marshall is has a posse, like, you know, Shepard Fairey posters of like how great this guy is. And just, you know, dominating games as a small ball five, and Kessler Edwards and Brandon Williams and all sorts of guys who we probably didn't expect to be talking about at this point in the season. They're playing massive roles for the Mavericks because they just haven't had any bodies. And so AD, there was that, the rumblings like, is AD going to like even bother coming back? Are the Mavericks going to stealth, try to tank and get, you know, out of the play-in so that they can hang on to a lottery pick and maybe take one more shot at this, whatever. AD had, you know, was very clear after he came back against the Nets, like, I see these guys out there giving it everything and like trying to just hold down the fort while we're out. Like, I had to try to get back. I felt like it was my job as like the leader of the team and somebody who is coming in and shouldering this responsibility. I got to get back out there. So he gets back out there. It's going to be limited minutes. It's going to be, you know, back to backs. It's going to be, you know, take some time for him to get all the way back to it. They don't really have the luxury of that time, but he is owning that responsibility. It maybe shouldn't. He shouldn't. Maybe shouldn't have to. Maybe the people who made the decisions that got him there and got everybody into this place, they're the ones that need to be being taken to task for it. But if the Mavericks are going to have any life left this season, it's probably going to be because Anthony Davis is capable of getting on the court and reminding us just how good he was. And then with any luck, you know, we saw recently, I think it was Mark Steiner reported last week, the two bigs, Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford, were both advancing to 3-on-3 with the Texas Legends in the G League. And like, maybe they're on the way back too. Like, if maybe we get a glimpse of the, you know, 3D or 4D chess, you know, galaxy brain idea of what the Mavs are supposed to look like under this new Nico Harrison regime. If we get a look at that and AD looks like AD, that's not a team I think I would be excited to have to deal with in a play-in tournament, but getting there is the hard part first. And yeah, that's going to fall heavily on AD's shoulders, right or wrong.
Yeah. And look, he's been the hub of what they do when he's on the floor. Like that first game with the Dallas Mavs, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot how good this guy was. Like, he was incredible and making passes. The first play of the game was when he threw that lob. I think it was to Daniel Gafford right at the rim. Like the very first play in a Dallas Mavericks uniform was this kind of like, oh yeah, we haven't seen that guy as much, is the hub of the wheel for his team. But he's incredible, and he's, look, this Dallas Mavericks team is they're battered. Like, if they make the playoffs, it's going to be a really cool story for Anthony Davis as kind of this guy who is miscast as, you know, trying to save this entire franchise that he had no attachment to, right? And so he's got a really big task in front of him to carry this team into the postseason. Look, I don't know where the Mavs go from here. If they miss the playoffs entirely, I don't know if they decide to blow up this whole thing and say, look, we need to completely reshuffle everything and reevaluate everything, because Kyrie Irving coming at this age off of an ACL tear, there's going to be a lot of questions. But I feel like Patrick Dumont and Nico Harris are going to look at this and double down on their decision to trade Luka and use this Kyrie Anthony Davis core, Klay Thompson, as their template going forward. The average record for a team coming off a Western Conference Finals or Western Conference Championship is 56 wins. 30 games above 500 is the average of what you're seeing from what the Dallas Mavericks were looking at coming into this season. And right now they're 3 games below 500. So 3 games below 500, the other side of the coin is 30 games above 500. So that's the history of what the Dallas Mavericks are up against here. And so I've got Anthony Davis as the most important player because of that play-in tournament. We've got this like postseason going into the play-in, going into the postseason. On the other, I got four other players on my top five most important players going down the stretch. So for those who are watching at home and wanting to like figure out what am I going to pay paying attention to over the next 3 weeks, I got Anthony Davis at number one. At number two, you knew I was going to go here. Denny Avdija. Denny Avdija of the Portland Trailblazers. He's averaging 22 points, 10 rebounds, and 5.5 assists in March. The only two other players who are averaging 20, 10, and 5 in the month of March, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Nikola Jokic. So Denny Avdija has been incredible. The Portland Trailblazers defense, led by Tumani Kamara, they've been incredible over the last 2 months. Terrific. Top four in the NBA since January 19th, which is when Chauncey Billups moved Shaedon Sharpe out of the starting lineup to get a much more cohesive defensive unit. They've been one of the best teams in the Western Conference since that time. Offensively, they need Denny Avdija to be that Giannis, to be this baby Giannis out there to lead that offense in the transition. Number three on that list, I got DeAndre Jordan. Yeah. In the year 2025, DeAndre Jordan, who had 10 points, 17 rebounds, and 7 assists filling in for Jokic. That's a pretty good Jokic impression,
no
right?
Kidding.
7 assists from DeAndre Jordan in the previous game where he started. Again, he had 11, 15, and 4. DeAndre Jordan, in the year of our Lord, 2025, DeAndre Jordan is being like a pretty good, useful player filling in for Jokic, who's been injured with various injuries here down the stretch. And if they want to avoid that, you know, 5 slot or the 6 slot, if they're going to need DeAndre Jordan to spell Jokic in those minutes for at least a little bit. And I do think that Aaron Gordon's a big piece of this, but DeAndre Jordan, I just want to give him a shout out for still at this age, 36 years old, filling in for Jokic and doing a pretty good job. Number four on the list, I've got Norm Powell. When those guys are on the floor, Norm Powell, Ivica Zubac, Derek Jones Jr., James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, when those five guys are on the floor, the Clippers offense is averaging about 125 points every 100 possessions. When Norm Powell completes that, you know, foursome where he's got the shooting and the dynamic scoring that Norm Powell brings at this stage of his career, I love this dude. I love watching him play. When you have that release valve for James Harden and Kawhi Leonard to kick out to Norm Powell, who's been an excellent three-point shooter, I think he's a huge, huge key piece for not just the Clippers, but the entire landscape out West. And the fifth and final spot, Colin Gillespie. Yo, this dude, filling in for Bradley Beal and being like the stabilizer point guard for them, 43 assists this season, 7 turnovers. Scored 90 points this season, with 7 turnovers against 43 assists. He's Tyus Jones times 2. He's TJ McConnell. He's Chris Paul. A guy that can just like get your Devin Bookers and your Kevin Durant the ball without wasting any possessions and being a really smart player out there. They've missed that this season. And he's been a great table setter for the Phoenix Suns. In the last 5 games, 19 assists to 2 turnovers. Unheard of. Hats off to Colin Gillespie, two-way player filling in as the starter for the Phoenix Suns that are rolling. Dan, what are your thoughts on my top five here?
My thoughts are there's going to be people who are mad that it's not like Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Luka Doncic, you know, like who's the most important people in the Western Conference playoff picture? And like, it's Colin Gillespie, but I love it. I think it's incredible. I think plenty of praise and credit deserved for, you know, you talk about Denny Avdia and the Portland Trailblazers, like not only not letting go of the rope midway through what looked like another down season, but actually coalescing and building an identity. The Avdia trade was an absolute steal at the time. It looks downright larcenous now. Colin Gillespie, I think, yeah, they're going to run into that like two-way days problem of, you know, because when guys are that important, you need them and you got to burn through those 50 days. DeAndre Jordan, I have to admit my own failings here. I haven't been super locked in. Is he still picking up the dimes off the ground after he throws a pass? Like that was a big thing for a little while in New York or in Brooklyn when he would drop a dime and then like literally reach down and pick it up. If he's not doing that, he's blowing it. He's missing an opportunity. Shouts out to DeAndre Jordan. I love that your list. I have some similar teams, but some different names when we get into the little numbers. So I'm eager to do a little bit more chopping it up about these teams that are all so tightly congested in the Western Conference pack.
Yeah, after the break, we're going to get into your four little numbers. And then later in the show, we're going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks after we talked about them last week with some unfortunate news regarding Damian Lillard. And also LeBron is chiming in about Giannis numbers. So we're going to talk briefly about that. Dan, I know you're excited. Coming up right after the break, your four little numbers. All right, Dan, so you heard my top five here. Let's get into your four little numbers with your most important players in the last 3 weeks of the season. Let's hear it.
First little number, 115.4. That's the Denver Nuggets defensive rating with Aaron Gordon on the court this season, according to Cleaning the Glass, which strips out garbage time baskets and end of quarter heaves, things like that. 115.4 is 2.1 points per 100 better than when AG's off the floor. And that doesn't sound like a lot, 2.1, but in the context of the league, that's the difference between a bottom five defense and a league average one. And in the context of the Denver Nuggets, that's the gap, right? Like that's the most important gap to bridge for them. He is a massive part of the best version of the Nuggets. We saw that during their title run. We've seen that when he's been healthy. Point of attack defender on big wings, the guy you throw on a Kawhi Leonard or a LeBron James or a Luka Doncic. He's the weak side rim protector who kind of like makes it okay that's not something that Nikola Jokic does. Problem on the glass, somebody who can clear things up on defense or attack on the offensive end. Mismatch hunter option when he's out there against, you know, posting up on smaller guys, leaking out in transition, target for hit ahead passes, the home run shots from Jokic, all that kind of stuff. But on the defensive end in particular, he's really a swing piece there. When he's on the floor, they're outscoring opponents by 9.1 points per 100 possessions with an above-average defense. And that's like, to me, I think, when you've got the offense at the elite level it's been at, with Nikola Jokic doing what he's doing in the MVP race, with Jamal Murray being, you know, as good as he was before the injuries for the last like 45, 50 games or so, if you can get to a league-average defense and Gordon is able to healthily get on the floor, be healthy enough to give you that, might that be enough for the Nuggets in that tightly compressed tier below the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I think Aaron Gordon, you're right. He might be more important than DeAndre Jordan. You're right. I think when you look at Aaron
maybe
Gordon,
not as fun to talk about, but yeah, you know?
Yeah, he's essential to what they do. And when he's healthy and performing on the floor with or without Jokic, I think even more importantly, when there's no Jokic minutes and Aaron Gordon's able to kind of keep that offense afloat, yes, that's huge. By the way, Dan, have you seen Aaron Gordon's shooting percentages this year?
You know what? Why don't you hit me with them, Tom?
Listen to this. 52% from the floor, 46% from three, and 81% from the line. He's like a few missed free throws away from being in the 50-40-90 club. Aaron Gordon! It's amazing. Well, amazing star turn for Aaron Gordon, who, by the way, he is one of their better defenders, if not their best defender. And he's not a shot blocker, but he's a good rim protector. He's strong. A lot of guys they're going to make a lot of business decisions when Aaron Gordon's coming over from the weak side. They're going to decide, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to make that kick out pass rather than try to go at him. But Aaron Gordon is a really good defender. KCP last year, really good defender. But it's still like a crime. The fact that Jokic has never played with an all-defensive member while playing with Jokic in his career. You have a guy that good offensively, and they haven't been able to pair him with an Alex Caruso, with a Derek White, someone, a lockdown defender, Jaden McDaniels, Tomani Kamara, someone like that who can be kind of this defensive anchor that you're relying on Aaron Gordon to do so much cleaning up defensively. It's a real shame that we haven't had that. Jokic hasn't had an all-star or an all-defensive player next to him in his NBA career while he's been playing this well. And I hope one day we get to see what Jokic has when they have someone, Aaron Gordon, as good as he is defensively. What about an elite shot blocker or an elite lockdown defender, point of attack defender? And KCP was great for him, but not that caliber of player. So one day we'll hopefully get that, Dan.
Yeah, the Nuggets now, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. They enter Wednesday's games 2 games behind the Houston Rockets for the number 2 seed in the West, but only a half game up on Memphis in 4th and only a game up on the Lakers in 5th. So again, when you get Aaron Gordon back on the court, when you get obviously Nikola Jokic back on the court, that could wind up determining where in that cluster the Nuggets wind up falling. An awful lot can change from night to night at this point in the Western Conference standings. Speaking of which, second little number is 0.628, 628. That is the Phoenix Suns winning percentage this season. It's got nothing to do with Colin Gillespie, guys. I'm sorry. When Devin Booker has 6 or more assists, 628 winning percentage. If that sounds pretty good, it's because it is. That is a 51.5 win pace over the course of an 82 game season. And considering that the Phoenix Suns are currently under 500, that's better. This is where you want to be on the right side of that ledger. Devin Booker's had 6 or more assists this season 43 times. The Suns are 27-16 in those games. They are 8-15 when he does not have more than 6 or more assists. And that kind of gets to, you know, you mentioned the importance of Colin Gillespie as like a table setter, a guy who can get the ball into the hands of the playmakers. The original sin of this version of the Suns' construction, like, was bringing in Bradley Beal to take the ball out of Devin Booker's hands more often. And it turns out the answer might be it's better to put the ball in Devin Booker's hands more often and let him be the on-ball playmaker, the advantage creator, the guy who can crack things open for other guys. Then Kevin Durant starts to finish. Then you're able to kick out to your, you know, your dump off to your bigs for buckets to, you know, maximize a Nick Richards or to throw a ball to Ryan Dunn, let him contribute. And in the last 6 games here, they're 5-1. Devin Booker's touches, time of possession, passes per game, all up from earlier in the season. The Suns are scoring 124.5 points per 100 with Booker on the floor in this sample. Mm-hmm. 59 assists against 17 turnovers. Those are some Colin Gillespie numbers, let's be honest. And leading back into our little number, Booker's had 6 or more assists in all 6 of those games. So the Suns, we're under Mike Budenholzer, we found out they're not going to be a good defensive team. They weren't able to go get Jimmy Butler. They weren't able to make any other big additions at the trade deadline. Maybe throw the ball into Devin Booker's hands, let the basketball gods sort him out. Maybe there's worse plans for the Phoenix Suns as they try to sneak into the play-in tournament here.
Yeah, I feel like Devin Booker has had a mediocre season by Devin Booker's standards. Like, if we're going to hold him to the guy who was an MVP candidate a few years ago, hasn't been his strongest season, but a lot of that probably has to do with the Bradley Beal situation where it didn't really spark out on day one, and then of course, the Kevin Durant, the trade rumors at the trade deadline, all of that just off-court noise, new coaches every year. And we might be headed for a new coach this summer where it's just like there's just not a lot of stability around Devin Booker. And I do feel like we haven't seen his best yet. I mean, what the stats you're providing here, he's rolling. But I want to see it continue because when you have Devin Booker, who's able to shoot at a high level from downtown, his effective field goal percentage is down considerably this season. And I think when you're talking about all the spacing that Kevin Durant provides, you would think that having that lever of having KD and having Bradley Beal would help his shooting percentages not hurt. But now you're starting to see him get in the groove. And I think it's happening at the right time. Kevin O'Connor, a couple weeks ago, he was saying, like, who is, you know, in that like, group of outside of OKC, which team, if they make the playoffs, is going to be the scariest? And he was like, the Phoenix Suns, if they make the playoffs, they're going to be one of the scariest teams that you have to play. And I just kind of laughed it off. And then he made a point of like, if they make it to the playoffs, that means that Devin Booker is humming. That means that Kevin Durant has figured something out, that Mike Budenholzer has them playing at a great level. And he might be right about this, that if the Phoenix Suns get that 9 seed, that means that they went on a tear to finish the season. And it also probably means that Devin Booker and Kevin Durant have reached that next gear that we've been so desperate to see all season long. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Bradley Beal has been out of the picture.
Yeah, maybe it's, you know, one ingredient too many in the stew there, and you know, simplifying winds up making things a little bit more tasty. So Devin Booker assists, keep your eyes on that. Number three in the little numbers this week is +8.0. That is the Clippers net rating with Kawhi Leonard on the court this season, according to our friends at Cleaning the Glass. He was kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit, maybe because he's also kind of quiet, but also he missed the first 34 games of the season rehabbing from offseason knee surgery. But took a little while to get his minutes bumped up. But since the trade deadline, 35.4 minutes per game. And in his last 10 games, just under 25 points a game, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2.3 stocks, and a 606 true shooting percentage. So Kawhi Leonard numbers over the last 10 games or so. And as you mentioned, the combinations that Ty Lue's been able to put together, where it's Kawhi alongside Harden, Derek Jones Jr., Norm Powell, Ivica Zubac, all of those combinations are like among, when you look at like 3-man lineups, 4-man lineups, like they're all up near the top of the league in terms of their efficiency and effectiveness. I feel a little bit like Lucy with the football right now. But hey, Tom, could I interest you perhaps in a team that is a half game out of sixth, barely like right there with the Minnesota Timberwolves for seventh and eighth, you know, that, right in that mix, that has a top five defense and Kawhi Leonard? Could I interest you in that team come the springtime?
How about this? Circle your calendar right here. April 13th. That is the final game of the regular season. The Clippers are at Golden State. That number 6 seed could be on the line in that game. And the Golden State Warriors and Kawhi Leonard have a little bit of history. You saw Jason Tatum with Domantas Sabonis and landing on his foot on that 3-pointer down the stretch. The Zaza Pachulia rule was because of Kawhi Leonard in that 2016 season, where the Spurs were like a 66-win team and like one of the best teams of the past 20 years. That Spurs team was awesome. And that injury changed everything. A lot of the complexion of the NBA changes on that Kawhi Leonard injury. And so I kind of feel like Kawhi Leonard, if he does even like have a calendar, or he's not like Steve Buscemi out here with like crossing names off on the list, but I do feel like there's going to be an extra motivation on that game for that number 6 seed against the Golden State Warriors. If we can get everyone playing and there's not going to be a tanking situation or tanking out of seeding or whatever it is, that's going to be awesome, is that finale. And I hope Norm Powell, I hope James Harden and everybody's back. The NBA's like star problem, that a lot of these marquee games just haven't had star players playing in them. I really hope that in these season finales, there's a lot at stake, which in part is because of that play-in tournament. The 6 seed is its own kind of race in this Western Conference playoffs. Is like that 6 seed is going to be super, super valuable, that you don't have to go into that play-in tournament and lose twice and then you're done. So I love the play-in tournament, and I love the fact that Kawhi Leonard at this point in his career, we're talking about him still at playing at that high level, where we're going to have over the next 3 weeks, some like basically playoff games. And that one on April 13th, the season finale against the Golden State Warriors, could be basically, a playoff game right there.
Incredible. I'm speaking it into existence. We've talked about the emotional hedges here on the big number before. Healthy Kawhi from April into the early part of May. Like, that's what, come on. We've earned it. We deserve it. We need it. Let's see it. And our fourth little number this week, 30. Not that little, you know. above zero. That's the number of games in which Jaden McDaniels has made more than one three-pointer for the Timberwolves this season. And Tom, you know I'm professional because I made sure it wasn't Jalen. It's Jaden McDaniels. That's yeah. the one on the Timberwolves. Minnesota is 19-11 in the games where Jaden McDaniels makes more than one three-pointer. 52-win pace. When he makes one or fewer, 22-21. Just above 500, a 42-win pace. We know that Jaden McDaniels, you mentioned him earlier, as one of the elite stoppers in the league, all defensive team last year, somebody who can guard whoever you want at the point of attack. You know, 6'8", 6'9", with a huge wingspan, you know, like a shadow that's really hard to shake. But Chris Finch, the head coach of the Wolves, has often called him the barometer of their offense, because when he's getting shot attempts and when he's knocking down shot attempts, it means that the ball movement's going well, means that there's driving kick, there's player movement. The ecosystem is sort of healthy and humming. We know opponents are going to throw the kitchen sink at Ann Edwards. We talked about that in a recent episode where he's becoming more comfortable, not just with his offense and shooting game, but like welcoming that and distributing, getting other people involved. Could Jaden McDaniels' ability to get those shots and make those plays be the swing factor in whether Minnesota winds up on the top end of that 5, 6, 7, 8 mix, or winds up having to maybe play two games just to get into the playoffs and maybe staring down OKC? Where do you see Jaden McDaniels figuring in here?
Yeah, you saw that stat, you know, how like when Julius Randle was playing for them, they were 11-0 during that streak when, you know, bookending when he was hurt, and how important he was. And then I was mentioning how Dante DiVincenzo is like equally as important because he was playing well. And then you could throw in Jaden McDaniels when he's on the floor. That actually is the key. It's not Julius Randle or DDV. It's that Jaden McDaniels, since the All-Star break, Dan, he's shooting. We talked about Aaron Gordon in the 50-40-90. How about Jaden McDaniels since the All-Star break? 53% from the floor, 36 from three, and 91% on the free throw line.
Wow.
So he's like a couple made threes away from being 50-40-90 since the All-Star break. And that's huge for the Minnesota Timberwolves to have that kind of pressure release. And we know he's going to be all defense, but the offense is going to be kind of that swing factor, that key thing that you mentioned. His ability to kind of play in between the gaps, finish at a high level at the rim when those guys are throwing themselves at Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle bully ball. They need Jaden McDaniels to play at that level. And him shooting at this rate is so important, because when we go into the playoffs, it's not so much whether you get hot in the playoffs, it's whether the defenses respect you. And that is so Absolutely. Much a part of the calculus, is not whether you hit those shots when the ball comes to you. It's how much that defender is up on you, and that little space is the difference between Anthony Edwards. That little daylight is the difference between an Anthony Edwards dunk or an Anthony Edwards just dead end, right? And so that, to me, when we talk about these guys, it's not so much whether you get hot at the right time. It's also whether the defense respects you. And I think defenses are going to respect Jaden McDaniels a lot more since the All-Star break because of his performance, like you mentioned.
Well, whether there any of these things wind up mattering will have to remain to be seen, because if Anthony Davis is able to stay on the court, maybe that completely shifts the whole play-in tournament mix, and who the heck knows what's going on. But 21 is our big number for this week, and then there's four little numbers. So you got a lot of numbers to think about as we head into the break.
Yeah, we got some over-unders to revisit, unfortunately. And then we're going to talk about Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the Bucks, where they go from here right after the break. All right, so we got those four little numbers. We talked to Anthony Davis and how vital he is to the playoff picture going forward. Hopefully he can play in the 9 remaining games on the Mavericks season. They only have one back-to-back left on the schedule, and it is a back-to-back set in LA against the Clippers, so there's no travel in between. He probably still has his place in LA, so he can sleep. It's a home game, basically, for him. So in effect, I think there might be a good chance that Anthony Davis plays all 9 games if his body allows. So that'll be really cool. We can get that. Dan, couple news items here that we usually hit in the C block. We'll get to that in a second. But the over-under race that we've had throughout the season, you have broken the tie because Zach Edey. Of course, Zach Edey. The week that we recorded, this past week, last episode, that night, against the Portland Trailblazers, the game that I worked, he had 5 fouls in like 11 minutes. And that's important because I took the under on his foul rate and you took the over. And since then, he's had two of his worst foul trouble games of the season. And so now, Dan, you're up 18 to 16. How does it feel?
It feels incredible. You got to play the long game on something like this, even if what winds up mattering is the short amount of time in which he picks up all these fouls. I think it occurred to me recently that we haven't established any sort of stakes for this. It's just bragging rights. So I'm going to enjoy the bragging rights and then also be prepared to feel horrible about myself if and when these flip in next week. So for right now, though, I'm feeling great about it. Although Zach Edey, you know, defend with your feet, not with your hands. Come on, guys.
Yeah, yeah. That Donovan Clingan matchup against the NCAA tournament championship rematch, it did not go very well for Zach Edey. But I have to hand it to you. Congratulations on getting that early lead. There's only 3 weeks in the season. So we got the play-in tournament. We got the playoffs around the tournament, around the corner. And we also have what everyone's been waiting for is who's going to win the over-under challenge between Dan and myself. And it's looking like you got the upper hand. Isaiah Hartenstein, 0-16 from downtown, continuing to chuck threes and making me look stupid for saying the under on his three-point rate. But you know something. You and Mark Dagnall, you guys have like this, obviously this like line, this wavelength that you guys have this sixth sense where you're encouraging Mark Dagnall to make sure Isaiah Hartenstein continues chucking threes.
Yeah, I mean, we're both big squinters from way back. And so, like, we know we recognize one on our own. And so that's what we both looked so hard at Isaiah Hartenstein shooting threes that we knew something was about to come up. Really, I mean, I know we got to move off of this, but what the biggest plot twist of all, we started the big number by talking about like stretch fives and which ones are real, which ones are not. We should have had the foresight, the long sight to the squint sight to see Walker Kessler coming, that in the down the road, the deep, deep tank of the Utah Jazz, the ace in the hole they were going to pull out was Walker Kessler starting to shoot like five threes a night in the last couple of weeks of the season. It's been remarkable to watch.
Incredible. Honestly, I was disappointed on Tuesday night when he only took one three. I was very upset about it, especially because he made it. Like, come on, man.
Shoot to get hot, shoot to stay hot. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, come on. Can't wait. That's another thing. Another subplot to the season is all the tanking, the quiet quitting we're going to see down the stretch here. And if you haven't read it, wrote about it at Yahoo Sports recently about all the teams and all the weird things that they're doing, including Walker Kessler shooting eight threes in a game. Mark Madsen, coach of Cal Berkeley. Did you know that, by the way?
He's the coach. Yeah, I did not know that. I mean, listen, all that is old will be new again. And people that we watched and wrote about, you know, running teams and we'll all soon be crumbling into dust, but you know, we'll find another way out of this.
Speaking of which, okay, so we'll get to Dame in a second. LeBron was on Pat McAfee's show. I don't know if you caught that, Dan.
There
was
I missed a big it earlier,
1 hour special to kind
I'm aware of it. Yeah.
Little media blitz to promote Mind the Game, which is returning with Steve Nash, which is going to be awesome, I presume. Those two guys, those minds talking about the game. Wow. Okay. That's how they get inside that little worm inside your brain that gets you to promote their show without even realizing it. Yeah,
no,
it's going to be great. It's going to be great. But there is one thing that went viral was kind of as a promo to the episode, that LeBron said that Giannis Antetokounmpo would score 250 points if he played in a game if he played in the 70s. And his point was, if you take these athletes, they're bigger, stronger, faster, more skilled, and you put them in earlier eras, they would crush. They would do amazing. And we need to celebrate today's game and celebrate the stars and how good they are and how skilled they are. Because I think LeBron's point was we continue to bash today's game in order to lift up and glorify the past. And so everyone's laughing, the hyperbole of LeBron saying that he would score, Giannis would score 250 in the 70s in a game. Which reminds me of this story I did, Dan, back in our earlier days as scribes on the internet. Back in 2013, I wrote this story headlined, "What if LeBron took 30 shots in a game?" And the reason why I wrote this story was because Rudy Gay, I almost said Gobert, Rudy Gay had a game in which he shot 37 times and scored 29 points. And I asked LeBron, I was like, in a scrum, media scrum in Miami, I was like, what did you think about that? And he goes, man, if I had 37 shots in a game, I'd score 60, 70 easy. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. Knew that was going to be a pull quote that was going to get aggregated, if aggregating was a thing back in those early days of the internet.
It was. And I was probably doing it, but yeah.
you're like sitting here. Actually, I think I did aggregate.
I'm like, I might
story.
Have blogged off of Tom's question there. Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. So I went back and I was like, actually, what would it be? What is LeBron's scoring average if you did look at if he got 37 shots in a game? And here was the math. I went back and found out that he had scored 243 points that season on 144 field goal attempts. That is a scoring rate of 1.6875 points per field goal attempt. And if you multiply that, Dan, by 37, what do you get? 62.4 points. So when he says I would get 60, 70 easy, it was literally like in that range, 62.4 points if he did have 37 shots at that scoring rate. So he does have a little bit of like a mental math that does on occasion get things right on these sort of preposterous like hypotheticals. I just wanted to share that little anecdote there. And he does have an encyclopedic memory, but maybe he does like have like a TI-83 up there doing the math.
I mean, it's a beautiful mind. There's no doubt about it. I find myself wondering a little bit how talking down about the older players to promote today's players works with why we shouldn't talk down current players to promote the future. I think I'm losing my tenses here in what LeBron is trying to do, but. I guess I don't have a beautiful mind, so and I should probably mind the game a bit more than I do.
You should mind the game a little bit more. Let's talk about the Bucks because that Giannis quote. I'm not going to focus too much on that 250, like whether he would actually score 250.
Yeah, don't worry about that math.
Yeah, but he might actually, Dan, he might actually need to score around that or just a little bit higher than where he is that right now, because Damian Lillard, unfortunately, has been diagnosed with DVT, a deep vein thrombosis in his leg. And that is the second big name recently, Victor Wembanyama, who has had a blood clot in his leg, and it looks like he's going to be out indefinitely. There is some talk, Dan, as you wrote about for Yahoo Sports, about him coming back this season. There's some debate about that. And it really, as it comes down to the blood thinners that he has to go on to release that blood clot and make sure that it doesn't get up into his lungs or pulmonary embolism, something that Chris Bosh was dealing with in the Miami Heat. And that was two blood clots that Chris Bosh had in Miami. So this is not exactly a Chris Bosh situation. His career is not over. There's talk, as you wrote about, from the Milwaukee Bucks saying, we hope this is going to be a weekly thing rather than a career-ending thing. And they have a lot of optimism that he will be back before long. This obviously is a devastating blow to the Milwaukee Bucks, Dan. I don't know where they go from here. Kyle Kuzma is suddenly going to be thrust into the number two role for the Milwaukee Bucks. And first and foremost, just obviously, we hope for a speedy recovery for Damian Lillard. This is a scary situation for him Absolutely. And his family. But on-court stuff, the Milwaukee Bucks, they were already struggling to get any sort of chemistry with Giannis and Damian Lillard on the floor. Now you take Damian Lillard off the floor, and I wonder, what does that do to Giannis and his game, and also what that means for this offseason? Do you have any thoughts on like where the Milwaukee Bucks go from here?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge that they're going to have, as you mentioned, is just who is your number two offensive option behind Giannis, right? And so with Damian Lillard out of the lineup, you know, the next highest scorer on the Bucks is Kyle Kuzma at 14.1 points per game. He's shooting 29.4% from three since he got to Milwaukee. And then your number three guy after that is Bobby Portis, who is not available because he's still serving that 25-game suspension for violating the league's anti-drug policy. So it was performance-enhancing drug policy, rather. So there's just not a lot of consistent, steady shot creation, shot-making options. So I think the analogy or the analogous move for the Bucks here might be like when Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love were hurt for the Cavs in that finals against the Warriors, and it was just we're going to play dinosaur ball for the Cavs. And it's like, LeBron's going to take, yeah, he gets his 37 shots or whatever he winds up doing. But like, we are going to play as big and as physical and as, you know, muddy the game up, drag the game into the mud defense as they can. The number that I think is worth knowing here is that in non-Damian Lillard minutes this season, the Bucks have allowed 111 points per 100 possessions. And that's according to Cleaning the Glass. It will be the second best defense in the league over the course of the full season. Only OKC is below that. So the offense has been pretty brutal, especially in the minutes where Giannis is off the floor and Dame's off the floor, which obviously Giannis can't go the full 48 the entire time while Dame's gone. So there's going to be plenty of time where they're both off the floor. And in those minutes, the Bucks have scored like the Wizards, basically. So not where you want to be. But if you can muck the game up, and that's what the phrase Giannis used when he talked to Eric Name of The Athletic, like muck the game up. We can play huge. We got great length. We've got guys who can be physical and push teams off their spots and then play off of that, whether it's creating turnovers or getting misses. Giannis gets the rebound and then it's end-to-end pushing. That kind of approach, I think that's the style they're going to have to go with. And the question is just like, is that going to be enough for a team that, as you mentioned, was already like in, you know, kind of in danger of falling down to that number six seed line and, you know, being in at best a coin flip series in the opening round of the playoffs?
Yeah. They got to be really thrilled that the Miami Heat went into a nosedive because Orlando, Miami, if they were just treading water this year and just being like 500 ball, that sixth slot in the East would be really interesting, you know? But because there's such a buffer between the Milwaukee Bucks, who are in the fifth seed as this recording, 40-31. The Pistons are at 41-32. The Atlanta Hawks at the seventh slot are 5.5 games back. Right. So there's no real like worry on the Milwaukee Bucks side of missing the playoffs at this point. It's a little late in the game for that. But I do wonder if they reevaluate everything this offseason. I'm not saying trade Giannis, but I'm saying with this diagnosis with Damian Lillard, they're not going to be able to get full value for Damian Lillard, even if they wanted to put him on the trade block in this offseason, because I think even that question was in the realm of possibility when you look at these numbers. Okay, Dame and Giannis, when they were on the floor together this season, 115.7 points every 100 possessions. Halliburton and Siakam, 117. Okay, so they were at 115, Siakam and Halliburton at 117. KD and Booker, 117. DeMar DeRozan and Sabonis, 118. Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, 118. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams, 118. Brunson and Kat, 119. And Jamal Murray and Jokic, 127. Which, by the way, 127 offensive rating for Jamal Murray and Jokic and no one else is above 120 is insane. Yeah. Point being is that they already had questions about Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo before this happened. And now they got some really tough questions to ask themselves. Does Giannis want to keep this going another year with Doc Rivers and Damian Lillard and Brooke Lopez? Or are they just going to hit the reset button? And it's the same question that the Dallas Mavericks are having right now with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving. Is like, man, next season is going to be pretty rough if we unless we figure something out with these older guys and building on this core that haven't really come together. And the same question for Philadelphia. And I wonder, is the calculus for all of these GMs and ownership groups with the Phoenix Suns and how they've been struggling this season, what is that going to do for the 30-somethings on supermax or maximum deals? Are they going to reevaluate if that going all in on these star trios or star duos is really going to be such a premium for these front offices? And the old adage is like, you need three stars to compete at the highest levels to win a championship. You need like two Hall of Famers, three Hall of Famers. And I wonder if like OKC wins this whole thing this year, if that really is going to be challenged. This idea of like, you have to go get a Damian Lillard if you want to win a championship. You have to go get Paul George, Joel Embiid, and pair him with Tyrese Maxey. And maybe that going all in on these three stars is going to be a different calculus going forward.
I think what you come away with is the idea that it's much more about the fit and the overall health of the roster. Like, if you're not locking in that we are the top tandem in the league, which is what I think so many of us thought it would be when Giannis and Dame came together. But then everything else has to work in concert around it. And we saw that with the Thunder this season. You see it with the Cavs this season. You saw it with the Celtics last season, the Nuggets before that. It's not, do you have the two best guys? It's does your five, does your six, does your eight, whatever, mm-hmm. do they complement one another enough in a way that it will elevate everybody? And the Bucks have just, since that 2021 championship, and no one will ever get to take that away from them. And that was a sort of historic and a beautiful team and roster for the ages. But you strip away the it's just injuries every year, and you strip away parts, and Drew goes away. It's Chris Middleton goes away. It's you fire two coaches, you bring in Doc, you have series without Giannis. You have series where Giannis misses part of it and Dame misses part of it. You have series without Middleton. You've got, you wind up in this place where you're paying tens of millions of dollars in luxury taxes every year. You are like looking at the apron before you even get into next season. You have Brooke Lopez about to come up for unrestricted free agency. And what are you going to do with the five there, considering he's still your only center on the roster, really? As you mentioned, Dame becomes a much bigger question because of no one knows exactly what his future is going to hold. Giannis is 4 or 5 years older. It puts you in these positions where you've made all of these repeated double down bets, like you talked about with the Suns. And eventually it's just like, if all the bets go bust, then where does that leave you? So yeah, I grow kind of weary of the, is Giannis going to be the next disgruntled superstar out? I kind of feel like if Giannis wanted to leave, he would have made that clear at some point before just taking every opportunity to extend, which he's done all along the line. But it would not surprise me at all if whatever the roster winds up looking like in September is a hell of a lot different than what it looks like now. If what we are left with in 3 weeks' time or 4 weeks' time is a third straight first round exit after all of the moving pieces, after all of the money spent on it, you wind up with the same results. Something's got to change, you'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the new ownership, the Haslam partners there in Milwaukee, they just saw the Phoenix Suns when they took over, Matt Ishbia took over, made that huge trade for Kevin Durant. And then when Patrick Dumont and the Adelson family took over for the Dallas Mavericks, they trade Luka. And you have to wonder whether those two giant moves by new ownership groups have kind of set the stage for some craziness up there in Milwaukee. I'm not saying they're going to trade Giannis Antetokounmpo, but it just feels like this, I don't want to say a curse over all the injuries that have happened to Chris Middleton, Damian Lillard, and Giannis over the last few years. But that's got a way on Giannis. It's got a way on him. So we'll see what happens. I don't think he's going to be scoring 250 points in a game. I don't think that...
It'd be fun to see him try.
It would be fun. And as you wrote about, and you should read his story on yahoosports.com about, you know, what the Giannis Milwaukee Bucks look like going forward, it is going to be a lot of that Mozgov, Delly, LeBron James type bully ball, where Giannis is going to have to put on his LeBron hat and just basically try to go and get 40, 15, and 10 every single night for them to have their best chance. And I hope that his body can sustain it, because he's been injured too, and not his fault, but man, there's a lot of miles on those tires too. So I hope he stays healthy. And the rest of the NBA down this 3 week stretch before the end of the season, we get some of these matchups that we circled on the calendar. And Thursday night, who knew? Thursday night, Portland, Sacramento would have so much stakes for the postseason, but that's going to be a huge game. The Blazers are certainly, that's like the play-in game for the play-in game. We'll see what happens. Dan, thanks so much for the little numbers, and thanks so much for all the listeners out there for watching this show. Please subscribe, 5 stars, please, from Dan and I, that'd be great. And also thanks to Stone, Mike, and Emmy behind the scenes for producing the show, and everybody at Yahoo Sports for making this this happen. And let us know in the comments, do you think Giannis is going to score
250
points the rest of the season? Maybe that's a better measure. Thanks to everybody, and we'll see you next week.